Welcome to Home Education Matters, the weekly podcast supporting you on your home education journey. Hello and welcome to another episode of Home Education Matters. And today I'm joined by Emma from We Are The Nomadders. And we are going to be talking about van schooling, van life, schooling in a van, road schooling, road tripping. Road tripping sounds wrong. Road tripping can't be right. Maybe there's an element of road tripping if it gets a bit hard. But basically, we're going to be talking about all things learning on the go. And so I'm very excited to have Emma with us to guide us through a lifestyle that I think a lot of us are kind of equivalent of that sort of 1900s picture of the child in front of the sweetie shop with their nose pressed against the glass. I think a lot of us have that response to your lifestyle. So Emma, first of all, hello. Thank you so much for joining us. And do tell us a little bit about your home education journey to begin with.
Hi, thank you for letting me join you. So our home education journey is probably a little bit different to others. We don't have the normal, well, I don't know that there is a normal home education journey, but our home education journey started in a van. So that from the first point was slightly different to many people. Many people that home educate do go traveling, but we are aiming to and have just started traveling and home educating at the same time. So it's a larger element of travel within our home education life.
So when you say your home education journey started in a van, do you mean that it started in a kind of static van because you weren't in a house? Or do you mean it started on the go immediately?
Pretty much on the go immediately. So we deregistered from school in the summer and our plan did change slightly, but the plan was to leave in September and start travelling around Europe. That altered and fiddled around a bit. So it did start in the van with, but I would say that we're slightly formal and slightly informal with our home education. So I was a teacher. So that element of the education system is very much within me, although I don't always agree with it, which made our choice to home educate in a way quite easy. When we decided we were going to go traveling in the van, the question of bringing the kids and educating them wasn't too much of a concern.
Was that what came first? Was it the desire to travel and then therefore the home education had to kind of follow because otherwise you wouldn't have been able to do the traveling? Or was it that you wanted to home educate and so you thought, oh, well, now I'm going to home educate, I may as well take them?
It's a bit chicken and egg, really. I'm not really sure which came first. We knew we wanted to travel. We've always said we were going to travel, and because I had what everybody classed as our really long holidays as a teacher, the idea was originally we can go away for the whole of the summer and not worry about it because we can go for that period of time. The flip side to that is obviously everything is really expensive at that time. So whatever we were doing, we needed to have jobs to be able to afford to take 6 weeks holiday. So my husband would have to have 6 weeks off as well, and we'd have to cover all the costs type thing. And when COVID appeared, we were really lucky, in a sense, for being such a bad time. I was obviously still working, but we were doing online education, and we were rotoring in school, at our school. We were rotoring for those children that had to be in school. And the rest of the time I was at home, obviously, with my children. And although they could have gone to school, we kept them home because one of them was too young to be in school. So we had no way of looking after that child unless I was at home. So that worked reasonably well. The good bit that I was talking about was my husband was furloughed for a month. And that was the first time since my daughter was born 9 years ago that we'd been able to, we both worked full time. So we've been able to spend any amount of time with the children all together, with no other things going on. So that was a really good time in our lives together as a family for us to get to know each other better. And at that point, we were like, this is what we should be doing. This is definitely how it should be. And from there, we sort of then quite quickly, I guess, in a way, because it's only been sort of the 4 years, by the end of the third year, we were off and going.
So
So
it just felt like a really natural move for you when you spent that time as a family unit, you just thought this is how it should be.
yeah, and I guess I, in a way, have been a little bit, don't know what the right word is really, disenchanted with the education system. Shall we put it like that?
I feel like that's a euphemism.
I was finding that I was, having had children, you see how different they are. In the classroom, you meet 30 children generally. I taught in primary school, so I had them all day. So you get to know them really well and you really see how different they all are. And yet we're fitting them in this little box. So I was finding that quite irritating, shall we say? And also having then had three children quite quickly, so they were within a 3 year age gap. It was really evident really quickly with all three of those that they all learn differently, they all have different interests, and yet in the classroom, and I'd be saying it to loads of parents, you know, when you've got a child is your child, they're going to do their own thing. But when there's 30 of them, we have to funnel them into certain ways of doing things within the classroom. And I was starting to find that harder and harder, really.
And I'm
So
guessing you were also looking at your children and thinking,
yeah,
this is
they're
what's going to
having the
happen to
same
them.
process. Yeah. So, I mean, and their school was brilliant. I've got no faults with their school. They enjoyed it. They loved it. And I was seeing children that I was teaching struggling and knowing that there was, that we couldn't do enough for them. We were totally constrained as teachers. And most teachers feel like that in reality. Most teachers are, or most teachers I've met, I should rephrase that. Most teachers that I have met have a similar feeling that we are all doing the best we can with what we've got. And we're getting less and less, and we've got to do more and more. And it's not always best for the kids. It's not always, conducive to the way children learn.
It really makes you wonder who the education system is working for, because it doesn't seem to be working for children or teachers. So it makes, I mean, like, who is it? Like, is it the government? I don't know. Maybe that's too political, but I cannot
Was
work
going to
out.
say, we're getting a bit political
I
there.
just can't work out if it's not functioning for anybody. So for you felt, okay, so it wasn't functioning for you professionally and it wasn't functioning for you as a family. So you,
Yeah.
COVID was a delight for you, I'm guessing, just because you were able to see that there were other options.
Yeah, and in reality, when COVID came, we actually sat there and said, "Oh, maybe people are going to start realizing the world is opening up and the education system's got a chance to change." And that was genuinely, we'd had these conversations. Maybe the education system will change because they've got a chance to alter things and change expectations. And no, it didn't. So at that point, we were very much had this dream of going traveling more, had the dream of having a van conversion to start off with. And we're looking really, without telling anybody else, we just were working through this. The kids had no idea. Kept it all quiet, just sort of worked through all the processes and tried to work out the best way we could do it. And within that, we didn't really, I guess, worry too much about the education side because I taught in primary school, so I knew what the expectations were for them. I know what they need to know according to the national curriculum. But also, we knew that travelling, we could do anything we wanted, really. They were free to, you know, some of the stuff you do in school, you do year three generally is rocks. There's a rocks, science rocks element. And we were straight away, we're like, well, we're in mountains, you can pick up the rocks, they can feel them, they can look at them, you can see the striations in the rock, you can discuss how they move, how it's all there, and they're stood on this mountain talking about it, as opposed to in the classroom, you've got a picture up on the board and you're trying to explain to them, oh, look, the mountains do this, do that. Some kids have never seen a mountain. They don't go anywhere to see it. The only place
This
they see it is on a board in the classroom.
is very much that idea of the world being your classroom, right? That everything you need to learn is out there. And so how did you navigate your move from teaching to, I'm guessing you're doing online, are you doing, how are you funding your van life? Because everyone's going to be sitting at home thinking about, thinking this exact question. Well, that's lovely. How are they funding this?
So we're still on a bit of a precipice on that one. We bought our motorhome a couple of years ago. Pretty much bought that outright without touching money from the house. I know people sell their house and buy their van and live off that. We decided ultimately we probably want to settle somewhere. So we were going to sell the house and then use some of the money to fund our journey and keep the rest and settle. That didn't happen. So we rent the house at the moment. So we've got a bit of income from the house being rented. And then I tutor online as well.
Yeah, I
So I'm
wondered
quite
whether
lucky in
you'd
that.
move to online tutoring.
And with Schengen at the moment, hopefully we'll get the EU passport through my husband. That's it's in the process. It should be coming through any minute, but
How are you claiming your EU passport?
He's Irish, so he's going through the Irish passport system.
So at the moment you're juggling around the Schengen rules, are you going around Europe?
Yeah, so we did our 90 days in France, Spain, and Portugal. We've kept a few days over, so we're back in the UK at the minute, and then we're heading off to Morocco. So we've got 8 days left in Schengen that we can get down to Morocco. By the time we've done a month, 6 weeks or so in Morocco, our Schengen's back up to the 90 days. So we've got another 90 days to tour back around for a bit.
So I'm guessing you have you use an online Schengen calculator and then just kind of work out, you know, sort of torturously like a military operation, work out where you can spend time.
So the my husband does that. So he's plotted where we've been, and he also plots on there where we'd like to go, so that we've got an idea of our dates, of if we can steal some from here and add it here. And so that's how we've got to the saving 8 days to travel down to go to Morocco and then build back up our 90.
Do you stay at campsites or car parks or road sides? I mean, how do you plan, or do you, does that depend on the country?
We've done a bit of everything, to be honest. We've bulked up our, we've got a big truck. So we've got a twin axle truck. So that's one of the big, long 9 meter ones. So we bulked up by putting in an additional battery to give us extended use off grid. And we've also got solar panels. So we can off grid as we are, because we do live a rather luxurious lifestyle, I guess, in that most people that go off in their vans use a 12 volt system. We've got a 12 volt system, but we've also inputted a 240 volt system, so we can have computers and my laptop and do all the day-to-day stuff, because it's essentially become a home.
How have you found it, all five of you spending all your time together in a van? What's been the kind of learning curve there?
Being cozy. It's been good, because we tend to go out quite a lot. So our normal day would look like a bit of schoolwork. So the kids have iPads, so they usually wake up nice and early. And so they've got some apps that they could do reading on. So they have to read every day. They do some maths every day. We do some writing, spelling, that type of thing, as a more formal aspect of their learning. And then once they've done those bits, they don't do them every day. If we're going out for the whole day, they won't have that, because they're learning the whole time anyway. They're reading the signs as we go, they're reading the brochures that we've picked out, they're reading maps, they're doing all sorts of other bits and pieces. And then we'll do either some more work based on the area we're in. Sometimes it would be, so we were in Spain and we looked at the Moors, which is something that you wouldn't look at at school because it's not something that comes up, but we sort of talked about them, the religion, how things have changed, how the Moors have sort of influenced building architecture. We've gone and seen all these buildings, you know, it's just been there. So we've been able to really easily give them knowledge and understanding that they've never had being here.
So for you, you found that this kind of power of conversational learning and exposure to local, you know, local history and local museums and things has been really helpful for you in your education journey. But I noticed that you're not completely unschooling, which is normally, I think, for world schoolers, it is quite a popular route, isn't it, unschooling? What was it that made you stick to doing some sort of structure every day? Was it that primary teacher inside you trying to get out?
I guess a little bit. I think for us, we wanted to keep options quite open for the kids. We're very aware that we've dragged them out of what they're comfortable with. Part of that was for a good reason, because we didn't want them to just see their world in this little centre that we lived in, which it was becoming and it was feeling like. And we'd travelled so much before, and we haven't really... The house we've just left, we'd been in 6 years, which is the longest we stayed in one place. And we were getting itchy feet, I guess, as well. But we wanted the kids to have this experience. We were finding that we couldn't go out and enjoy ourselves with the kids as much because we were working all the time. And then when we did go out, the cost of going out was so high. And like you say, a lot of people are going to be saying, well, how can you afford this now? The cost of living in a motorhome, once you've sorted everything out, is quite minimal, really. I mean, you've lost all your massive bills. If you can go off grid in Europe, which is quite easy to do, it's you don't pay anything. You can just park up in most places anywhere. Even when you have to go on a campsite, it's 10 euros, 15 euros, you know, or an air more than a campsite. But yeah, a campsite's more expensive. But so that day-to-day living has decreased massively, which has meant that it's opened up for us to be able to go and do those other things that we weren't doing here.
You mentioned that you'd taken the children out of school, and so this was very different. How are they enjoying it? Is it, do you get those kind of conversations when they... Yeah, exactly. I bet it does depend what day, right? So I bet some days they're like j'accuse and pointing their finger at you for taking them away from their school friends, and then other days they love it, right?
Yeah. I mean, initially when we told them, about 6 months before we were going. So we'd got everything was in place, and they were the last bit of the puzzle was telling them in terms of, like, we are actually doing this. The responses at that point were, my daughter, who was nine, I could see the eyes were starting to go. And I just turned around to her and said, you're not going to lose your friends. We can still keep in contact. And once she'd got over that, she was sort of getting more excited. My two boys, who were 6 and 8, were... One of them was like, oh, okay. That was it. And the other one was like, so where can we go? What can we do? You know, and so he was more inquisitive about it. And that is really their personalities, to be fair. One's a worrier. One's just sponges everything, nosy about everything, wants to know everything. And the other one's just like, yeah. Can't be bothered, I'll just do whatever. And so that's sort of how it stays, really, as we've gone through the process. It was hard when we left, because it was such a change. They were leaving family, they were leaving the house, they were leaving school, and they were going to this foreign country. So at first we had some kickback, some sort of like just behaviours more than anything, just not wanting to do things, not interested. So although we were homeschooling, we weren't pushing it, but we were still making them do some reading, still doing a bit of English, a bit of math. It wasn't really intense, because we sort of felt that, I guess, a parent guilt. So coming back to what you were asking, it's sort of parent guilt that's made us sort of start this way. I'm quite personally quite flexible in how we do it. My husband's more, if they're going to go back to secondary school, when we come back, I want to know that we've done everything we can to make sure they're ready to go back in. So some of the actual following the curriculum still a bit and being a bit more inflexible in some ways, in parts of it, is that side of it, is the making sure that we're not losing anything for them. I don't think we are, but it's that little nag in your head sometimes. So it's sort of balancing out. So yeah, they do the English, the maths. They don't do it in any way like I did it in school. So I still use resources I had at school because some of them were really good, but it isn't. There's a lot of chat. There's a lot of talk. You know, what gets down on paper isn't like streams of sums. It's just, I'll have a go at these two. Can you do those? Ah, well done, you've got it, sort of thing. It's a lot more flexible because you can just keep coming backwards and forwards to it all the time.
Yeah.
And because you've only got three, you don't three. Have to. Yeah. Yeah. Because you've only got 30. Three compared to 30.
Three sounds quite a lot to people listening, I suspect. Yeah. Three children in a van.
Yeah. So in that respect, yeah, I think we've sort of combined it in a way just to make sure that if they step back into secondary education, if that's what we end up doing, if that's what they want to do, I mean, we're still open. We don't know what we're going to do yet. So could be 5 years down the road yet. I don't know.
Could be 10 years down the road yet.
Could be whatever, yeah.
How have you noticed the children's relationship with each other develop as they've spent more time with each other and less time in separate year groups?
There's good and bad to it, really. They get on quite well, to be fair, and they'll pair up. Sometimes you've got two together and one alone and the other way around and stuff. So my daughter was actually diagnosed with dyslexia. So for her, this has actually, I think, been quite good because her confidence can build up. She's comparing herself to her brothers, but she's also very aware that she learns in a different way and that she does things differently. And that she'll go right around the houses to get to one point, whereas her brother will just go straight to that point because that's what he's like. So
yeah, but
think
of all the things she sees as she goes around.
Absolutely. So in that respect, for her, 100%, she has gained so much confidence and can see that other people learn in different ways and it doesn't matter. It's quite hard for her because she's the oldest and one of her younger brothers is quite with it. So sort of, can answer quite quickly, whereas her processing is different, so it takes her longer. So she gets a bit frustrated, but I think because we're there and we're close too, we can very quickly see and just boost her again, really, and say, but you could do other things. So that's worked well. But my middle one, who's quite, because he picks everything up, sometimes he gets a bit so it's been quite good in terms of showing him that people learn in different ways. He is quite good with his sister in terms of knowing that she does know stuff, but it takes her longer. And she knows quite a lot of other stuff that he doesn't know. So we're doing sort of backwards and forwards discussions and teaching. So that relationship has, I think, built up better between those two. The younger one's just quite lazy sometimes. So for him, it's quite nice to see somebody that's firing and then somebody else that doesn't process as well. And he can do everything. He just chooses what he wants to tell you he can do, really. So I guess lazy is probably not the right word, but he won't put anything forward unless he feels he really has to, because that's just his personality.
Pragmatic.
Yeah. So them learning about each other has been really good. Flip side is they know which buttons to press on each other because they're always together, which they knew as siblings when they were at school. But they still spent a fair amount of time together because they're a childminder together, then at school, then a childminder again, and then at home. So they weren't often separated because obviously the childminder, they're all together all the time as opposed to at home where they could separate off a bit. So I think they're having to learn that personal space about each other's moods and to realise, yeah, you can press each other's buttons, but you've got to deal with the outcome because you're right there with them. You can't escape it. So I think in that sense, it's had quite a big impact on them.
I mean, the same must go for you as well. If you went from having a full-time job and childminders to suddenly being 24/7 with your children in a van, that must have been quite a move for you as well as a parent.
Yeah, I did cut down from full-time to part-time. And
training.
Well,
training
yeah, I was
for
just
the van
frustrated.
Life.
I mean, the reality of sending your children to a childminder from 7:30 till 5:30, you teaching a class of 30 during that time and seeing them longer than you saw your kids when you got home, it was just like, this is daft. But then again, we had to live as well. So we had to have enough money that we could live. So it's all juggling. It's all always juggling. Everything's juggling. So I guess when we got in the van, I decompressed a bit, I think, from teaching. Sort of even doing the home learning, I was sat there sometimes like, oh, I just want a break. I just don't want to do anything educational. I actually would just like to sit and not talk to anybody, but you can't because your kids are there. And realistically, I mean, when we go out and about around the cities and on walks and things like that, my husband's really good at talking to the kids about everything around. So I sort of get my a bit more of decompression at that point because he's well into history and stuff. So he's always looking at historical stuff with them. And yeah, so I guess, yeah, it's a bit different. You have to be able to let things go.
How long have you been doing it now?
We started in September,
Okay.
so 3 full months like away, and then we've had odd bits as well in between that. But so at the moment I'm with the kids full time and my husband's off working, so
So
we'll be
are you
back to
back in the
get the job.
UK at the
Yeah,
moment, but
at the
still in the
moment.
van?
No, we're at my dad's house at the minute, just for ease, because parking a big truck like that in the UK is not as easy as is abroad.
What countries are on your hit list for the next year or so?
Morocco,
For Schengen
Hungary.
reasons.
Hungary. We'd want to go there anyway, but it's just a good excuse to get in quick. So we've got Hungary, Germany. We used to live there, so we want to go and show the kids Germany. We want to go up through Denmark. We're going to go to Sweden, Norway, and Finland. We're sort of thinking in the hot weather doing Northern Europe. Ultimately, we've got to come back for a few things, and then we're going off again. And ultimately, I think the idea is to go from here once my husband's passport's through, because then we haven't got Schengen worries, all the way down through to Turkey. So we'll do all the countries down through, like Croatia.
Do you sort of plan where you're going to stay in advance, or do you just do it on the hoof?
Bit of both. We found sometimes we plan and then the plan goes totally wrong. Really, I mean, spectacularly, like just doesn't work. And other times we get near somewhere and we're like, right, now we'll have a look and we'll find somewhere. So it can be a bit stressful, but the stresses are different, I guess. We're not worrying about the next bill in the house. We're more worried about sort of, okay, if something goes wrong in the van, where are we going to be at that point?
I've got a question that I suspect quite a lot of our female listeners might be thinking, which is that how have you found it being sort of navigating your way around all these countries with your husband? Because I know that car journeys can be fraught if you're just going from like Slough to Hounslow. But like if you're going to Morocco, I can't even imagine the amount of arguments that must be like simmering. It must be, you must have tested the relationship, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
I guess so. I mean, we've had various discussions. We haven't had full out arguments, so I have to say that. Yeah, I mean, there's times where I just shut my mouth and seethe, and he does the same. We have a very good sat nav. That's number one. And I guess he tends to drive when I do some teaching. So we try and keep the driving down to about 2 hours to 3 hours, which is then the input time with the kids. So that sort of balances out because he gets his own time. I'm obviously with the kids, so we're not irritating each other. But on the whole, it hasn't been too bad. I think the hardest thing is when you want to talk about things that you don't want the kids to hear. Because, you know, various things happen. Somebody tells you something, you sort of want to discuss it with each other, or you want to talk about something that's not gone quite right, but you don't want the kids to overhear because if they overhear, they're going to start thinking about it and worrying about it or wanting to know what's going on. So that's the harder bit, I think, more than anything else. We're both quite okay in each other's company. We're also okay out of each other's company. Like at the moment, he's away for 2 months working and I'm here with the kids. So we're not seeing each other in those 2 months. So that's given us a break, I guess. We'll appreciate each other more.
So tell me before we finish up, tell me the What is the worst thing and what is the best thing that you've discovered about this life in the last sort of 4 months that you've been doing it?
The worst thing, I guess, is just not knowing what's around the corner. So it's not a set out life. You've got to be pretty flexible. Anything could happen at any time. I know it can in real life, but you've generally got a house and you're sat there. So if something's thrown at you, everything around you is the same. For us, the bit around us that's the same is the kids and my husband and me. That's the actual square footage of the van, I guess. Other than that, you can open your door on anywhere. So I guess that's probably the hardest bit. And not seeing people, you haven't got those people just around the corner you can go and have a coffee with and things like that. But you do meet some great people on the roads. You stop and chat. Probably not for as long as you'd like to. So that's one downside, I guess, is that element of it, sort of not knowing day to day. And even when you plan, your day to day can alter quite quickly. Best bit, it's probably the same thing in a sense, is the fact that you've not got a 9 to 5. You're not tied down. You can get up in the morning and think, nah, we don't need to go anywhere. We can just sit here. We can go out for a walk. We can come back. We can eat when we want. We're on our own timetable, really. And just the amazing stuff you see. I mean, I've probably forgotten as much as I can remember of what we've done so far because we've done so much.
You're not tempted to journal or anything.
Well, we use Facebook and Instagram. So we're on Instagram. That's more of our sort of photo journey. So we upload, there's not been anything on there for a couple of weeks because we've been here, but we upload sort of every couple of days there of what we've been doing and where we are. We have a YouTube channel. So that sort of has our, so we film a lot. So what goes on YouTube is a tiny part of the actual filming we do. So we're trying to keep those as well because for the what comes up on those videos is obviously stuff that we want family and friends to see and we think will be interesting to people that might want to do this life or are interested in home education and see what we're doing. And for us to remember what we've done because there is so much. And so the additional film we're trying to keep as well for the kids. Because there's stuff we've cut out because it was just stuff we really loved doing or conversations we've had that wouldn't mean anything to anybody else. So that side of it. I am going to try and keep more of a journal as we go now because I think it's just a nice thing to do. But when we thought we'd have loads of time, we probably haven't got loads of time to fill it all the time with exploring and talking and you sort of have this I had this world idea, oh yeah, I'd have hours and hours spare in a day and you have, but you're busy doing other things with it. It's like you're outside with the kids, they're playing on their bikes. It's not the 9 to 5 job, it's just seeing the world really.
When I was world schooling, I look back now and think I really should have done a blog of all the countries that I lived in. But at the time, I just did not have time for that. I was like
There's so much to
busy with the
do.
children. You know, it's only
So much
now
to
when my
do.
children are teenagers, I'm like, oh, I really should have done that. It's like, well, isn't that a nice thought in hindsight? But like the reality is that you just don't have the time, do you? So tell our listeners where they can find you on your different social media links then.
Okay, so we're on our YouTube channel is We Are the Nomadders. 1D for some people to put two. So We Are the Nomadders with 1D. We Are the Nomadders on Instagram and We Are the Nomadders on Facebook as well.
That's nice,
So
consistent branding.
very consistent branding for ourselves as much as anything else.
Yes, and only one thing to remember. I'm sure our listeners will be interested in following your journey, and I know that I'm looking forward to some Morocco pictures because I've never been to Morocco. I've always wanted to go. So I've been to Tunisia, and but Morocco was obviously just that one step along that I never got to. So I look forward to seeing your Morocco photos. And thank you so much for coming on, Emma. It's been really lovely and very inspirational to hear your story.
Not a problem. Thank you for inviting me. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for joining us for today's Home Education Matters podcast. See you at the next one. Have a lovely day.